Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Kirk Grace on the line. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah. You know, it's getting into the holiday season when, as this show is going to be coming to air, and we're also approaching our 300th episode.
Wow.
I think we're at 277, 278, something like that. Have you kept track of how many times we've asked people to send us a comment or a question or anything?
Probably 272.
Yeah, we might have missed a few.
We might have said it twice. But yes, we've gotten some good feedback and not enough. We'd like to have more, of course.
That's right. Yeah. And we, you know, it's a big part of the show is, you know, right now it's just you and I talking. We're in our separate houses and talking to our microphones. Yet the idea was started at a conference where we were like, how do we keep this conversation going? How do we keep it going? And so that's why we keep asking our listeners to chime in. Now, many of our listeners may have noticed in the last few episodes, we've added advertisements. And they're just us, basically. Kirk, yours is, I think, the first two that we did. And Adam's mm-hmm. got a couple of going. And we're working on getting the other ones recorded and included. And here's an example of one of those advertisements.
Kirk Gray here to mention that John Paskowitz and I published a book, Next Generation Halton Haas, Robust Design of Electronics and Systems, which provides the basics of applying Halton Haas and reveals how Halton Haas can discover software issues also. To find out more and get a copy, go to exendoreliability.com/go/halt.
Right, now, Kirk, you know, one of the things that we do get a few comments. We mentioned earlier that we have been asking for comments and feedback and people to join the discussion over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
One that came across this week was a short little table of five machines, A, B, C, D, and E. And they had each run so many hours and they each had so many failures. And there was a column where it had time to failure calculation and it had a column for time. Without the M in front of it, I'm drawing a blank. Time between failures, TBF.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't show me the calculations. They didn't show me the raw data of how long. What were the time hacks when the failures occurred? What was the nature of the failure mechanisms? So the two columns were different. So I imagine some things failed twice, right? And so it was time to first failure in the first group and something else and in time, including all failures in the second. And, and the question they asked was, well, which one should I calculate? What are you laughing for? You
know? Well, because as the guy who runs the no MTBF, and that would mean no MTTR too.
That's right.
or MTTF, you would come up with a question of what are you really wanting to know? You know, what is it that you're trying to figure out?
I'm glad I got at least one reader of the site.
And so, you know, I agree. Once again, that just opens a question for you, or really much broader questions and more fundamental than what should I use to calculate this average number that really, you know, is going to not really provide any benefit in the end. We want to focus, at least in my world, and my frame of reference for all of reliability isn't really the statistics, although those can be very useful in equipment that's going to wear out. But the first thing, you know, I would ask the guy, what's wearing out and how's it wearing out, or how's it failing? And are these failure mechanisms consistent? Because if it's a random different kinds of failures, that's a different problem. I mean, that's a different
I mean, it also could have been just on their first setup of the equipment, and it could be the, you know, just dialing it in and getting the alignment set up and
exactly
and tweaking it, or it could actually be wear out. I that was my first question. Well, what's failing?
Right. You know? And that's the most important thing. I keep repeating this, and it seems to be, it should be self-evident, that you can't understand how to make anything more reliable without understanding why it isn't reliable or what is causing failures. What is the physical mechanism causing failures? And that should be the primary focus of engineers involved in reliability, is understanding what are the physics that cause this mechanism to, and it can be combined, many combined stresses. It can be, like you say, it can be adjustments of the machine that are incorrect. It can be just so many different things, and it can be, and it's usually, especially in failures, it's a combination of two different things happening simultaneously.
Well, now part of this is, you know, calculating these metrics, though, is it can support what you're saying is tracking on what's the failure mechanism.
Right.
And yes. Part of it is, but it's also used, I mean, these kind of metrics are also used to report up, saying, well, here's our availability of our equipment, the uptime calculations and stuff like that, and other business metrics. And I have problems with that, as you imagine, also using time to failure or mean time to failure and those kinds of things. But I think you touched on it earlier, and that was really my second question, was back to these guys with this, with their request was, well, what's the decision you're trying to do?
Exactly. What are you putting, what kind of weight is on this information? Is it just to kind of give a customer or something, or is it really, are you making a decision whether to change out a certain machine or
part buy another or
subsystem?
One?
Yeah. Buy another one. You know, it could be very misleading. In fact, it certainly isn't information you should be using to make any kind of critical decision.
Mm. Well, you know, my opinion, any decision.
Yes, any decision, right. And even providing it as a number to a customer, it's obvious that if the customer asks for this or you're, you know, he's obviously unaware of how this doesn't have really any usable reliability information in it.
Well, let's say, I mean, I calculate a tally and I get 25,000 hours MTBF.
Right.
Right. Okay. What does that mean? Right. there's all the ways that people misunderstand it, thinking it's failure-free period and all those other, just all kinds of problems. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yet it doesn't tell me what I really need to know in order to order spare parts or plan for maintenance or to evaluate the equipment. Is it wearing out or is it getting better? Is my maintenance program effective or not effective?
Right.
Maybe I'm running two different maintenance strategies on two different lines and I want to compare them. Well, they could both be at 25,000 MTBF and performing completely differently.
Right.
You just can't tell. And I think the basic problem and the reason you and I are both going, well, we need to understand what's failing and when it's failing and what's the pattern of failures in order to start asking, I think, even more questions then is to, well, what's driving that? What's what's causing those patterns to occur? Can we use this information to do preventative maintenance, replace parts and motors or lubrication strategies or whatever to avoid the failures? Or is it a startup problem? Maybe we need to change the process of setting up the equipment for the day's run. But you can't tell with just a single number that's a grand average over some period of time. It really doesn't help a whole lot.
No. And in fact, it can hurt.
Well, speaking of hurting, Kirk, I'm as we're recording, it's about the time that this tree service group has been working across the street for me for the last couple of days. And they they drove this huge truck where they were dragging an absolutely massive chipper behind it. And they would blow all the chipping into this truck. So it's a good sized truck.
Right.
And I live on a little bit of a hill, and this guy was riding his brakes going down a hill. And you know that squeal when you hit that wear bearing or the little piece of metal they put in brake pads?
Right.
Or on, you know, it's that you've worn this out a little bit. Now you need to replace it. It's kind of just really high, loud metal screaming sound.
Yeah, it's replace me. Replace me. You're in danger. You may not have brakes.
All right. So I, you know, I had been talking to these guys because they're pulling down all these trees and big limbs and stuff. And I'm gathering, it's the time of year where I'm really interested in firewood. So I'm having them throw it over on my yard and I'll add it to the firewood pile next year. And I mentioned to him, hey, it sounds like your brakes are really wearing out. And he goes, how can you tell? And then it realized, I dawned on me, right? These are guys that are around chainsaws and this chipper, which is a massive, loud piece of equipment all the time. They and the truck probably started squealing, not horribly, and then it just got worse and worse and worse.
Right.
But they can't hear it. They're accustomed to the sound. You know, it's just part of the way it operates now. That's normal. And, you know, unfortunately, it also means that if that brake pad actually breaks and fails, that they're going to lose their brakes in their truck.
Right.
And that's a real problem.
Well, let's imagine this guy is also a small business operator. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's got maybe two trucks. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows the truck's working right now. He's able to stop the truck, even with that screaming brakes. But if he takes the truck out of service, you know, he may have to lose money for a little bit.
He'll lose a day or 2 days of revenue.
Income.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like the same thing, you know, we talk about in, you know, production machines and equipment. And I was involved, of course, in semiconductor process equipment, $1 million ion implanter or whatever. And trying to understand, yes, it's a real conflict of interest. The guy, you know, realizes that, yeah, you should replace the brakes, but the business is right now going great, or this is maybe a seasonal business, I don't know. And he's got to, you know, grab the business while he can. He can't afford to replace the brakes at this point, or he can't, you know, maybe like you, he can't hear it, which he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of both. And it goes back to these metrics and the questions we're asking the person asking the question. About what to calculate is, well, what are you trying to do? Right.
Fred, I was just thinking, it's just like trying to guess when your gas tank is low. You know that when it's on E, the gas tank is not dry. Okay.
Right.
You know, there's something in there. And the question is, and we talk about this with derating and a lot of things, is how much margin in there? When does that brake start? Where the designer put in that squealing sound to happen? How much margin does he have? How much brake pad does he have left to use? And he may have done that, you know, he may have had a history of using those brake pads squeaking for a year.
You never know how long
he was able to do that. He says, I can do that again. You know, I don't need to replace these right now when they start squealing. I'm
save a year and he gets a couple more days of production. That's a good point. You know, I was going with the idea that if you're not looking for the problem, it's harder to see.
Right.
Right. Right. And so the metrics, if you use MTBF type metrics, it's just an average. And you end up not seeing the patterns. But if you don't know that you're looking for the patterns to help you make better decisions, and you use MTBF, you don't know that information, but you're also not looking for it.
Right. You're just smoothing out everything to kind of just this average number. Mm-hmm. And it shows nothing about what's happening. Like you say, in the beginning, it could be a setup problem that you had with the machine. And after you finished all eliminating those, the machine ran for, you know, 1,000 hours. But, you know, you calculate the failures at the beginning, which has a assignable cause, and it provides no benefit. I mean, it provides no information.
That's right. Well, and so part
of how many times can we say?
Well, it's part of one is not being aware, like this truck driver that his brake pads are wearing, or equipment that it may be showing some phenomena that they could do something about, yet they're not conscious to look for it, to hear the brake pad. I'm quite sure that the tree guys have, you know, their ears are ringing after every day's work. So it's just, coffee's kicking in. But it was, these guys that are in these trees, and there's redwoods around where I live, and they're 200-400 feet up in the air on these ropes and swinging branches around and chainsaws, and they work amazingly hard. And I agree that part of it might be that, you know, if I can get another day out of this, that's another $1,000.
Yeah.
It's part of the business. And like you mentioned, you've seen it in industries also. I don't get, though, is it doesn't take that much more work to look for those patterns in your failure data, or to ask the question, well, what is actually failing? Or even more fundamentally is, well, why am I gathering this data? What are we going to use it for? And then does it serve that purpose? Is it going to be helpful or not?
Right. And never have I seen average data help, or averages like MTBF, MTTR, whatever, had any. In fact, it destroys the critical information you need is when it's occurring, exactly when it's occurring, and not an average. So, but you know, you bring up there's another thing. These points of I don't understand why anybody wants to keep doing this other than providing a number to somebody that's ignorant of the benefit of how misleading this is. So again, I think your push to eliminate MTBF from the in the reliability field is admirable, and I sure hope someday that we get away, you know, can get away from that. But
thank you, Kurt.
and that's why I think we met up in 2010 or something like that, or earlier, 2008 maybe, that I said, well, this guy has got some need for change in this field, and I'm certainly one that agrees with you about that. So
here comes the truck. I can hear it now in the background. I don't know if the microphone's picking it up. You know,
wear out is another thing I always wonder about. Okay, in that brake pad, he's got the squeaking brakes. Now in my Honda Pilot, they have a little percentage of oil filter life used.
Oh, cool.
And I think, well, how did they calculate? Are they doing that just off strict? You know, I haven't really gone to research, but of course, being a reliability engineer and wanting to know, are they actually, say, you could get it on the back pressure of the oil. As the filter gets more loaded, you're going to have a higher resistance.
The pressure's gonna go up, yeah.
Right, exactly. And if they're doing that, then that's a very real empirical way of showing that you're oil filter is getting dirtier faster because
it could be engine hours, and it's got a lot of variability.
If it's engine hours and they're just tying it to the odometer or the engine hours, then no, I'm not going to follow it, and I'm going to let it go to 0%. So
you're going to try that with your gas gauge next time? measure it out.
It's always, you know, you always just hope when you got your gas down low. You say, I know there's gas in there. I just don't know how much.
Well, I know somebody's going to chime in here and say, you know, especially with an older car, the bottom of the gas tank has got it'll clog filters. It'll cause all kinds of other problems. You want
to
keep that. I had that with my first car in high school, is that if I got down to a quarter tank, it was like pumping sludge into the engine.
Oh, well, that's
not good at all. I had to get a tank of gas and a new gas filter. I had an inline filter that was, it looked like a water pump. It was huge, but it would fill up. It would just be just horrible.
That sounds like a design problem.
Well, it was also a $500 old Oldsmobile that my dad got for me for high school. And he was teaching me about wear out and the cost of maintenance and life cycle costing. I don't think he called any of it that, but he didn't want me to go anywhere because the car was in the shop most of the time.
Well, that would have been an opportunity for you to learn mechanics. But
that's right. Yeah. Well, anyway, we haven't really answered the question that we got on should I calculate MTTF or MTBF, and other than saying no, step away from the spreadsheet.
Step away from the MTs.
Yeah, step away from those metrics. And, yeah. But I think we did answer the question in saying, well, what is it you're trying to do? And a series of other questions. Right. And I appreciate the plug for the MTBF, the nomtbf.com site. Yet, if you've got a question, let's wrap it up here. If you've got a question, is you're listening to this, whether it's about a reliability metric or about wear out or testing or your favorite failure mechanism, something like that, let us know. Head over to reliability.fm. You can find the Speaking of Reliability show. There's comment forums and ways to get in touch with us on the site. And while you're there, check out the rest of the Ascendo Reliability site. You can see articles. Some of Kirk's, we were talking about it, some of your articles earlier today that get a little more on the controversial side and get lots and lots of traffic. Yes. And comments and stuff. So
yes. We're both change agents. I'm a little more, a little more intense about the whole field of reliability. You question it a lot with things like, are we teaching all reliability all wrong? Which I really enjoyed.
Oh, good. Yeah. But it's worth, so check it out. If you go underneath the articles tab on the Ascendo Reliability site, you can see the different article series. And Kirk, yours is named Accelerated Reliability, if I remember right.
Accelerated Reliability Solutions, Fred.
Well, that's your
company. Okay. Yeah. And under your Ascendo Reliability, it is Accelerated Reliability.
Yeah. You picked three long words. I shortened it a little bit. But that's the name of your company also.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
So check out some of Kirk's articles. They're always an entertaining read, and a lot of more current topics and interesting recent disasters is probably the best way to say that. I think your all-time best article is The Drain in the Bathtub Curve. That keeps getting good traffic.
So right.
That one is highly recommended to check out. So with that, head over there to the site, check out some of the articles, the other podcasts, things like that, but also take a moment to ask a question, to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Fred.
All right. Thanks, Kirk. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.